Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is The Program Is Abled, the program about what people with disabilities can do and not what they cannot do. And this series of episodes, we are looking at online education, but we're looking at it from all aspects. And one of the things that it's come on us so fast with this pandemic, we've tried to get just really different perspectives. We've got educators, we've got teachers, we've got administrators, we've got all kinds of folks. And Margie was recommended me by a state agency, so she must have some cred with the ed people in the state here. So I'd like to introduce you to Margie Butcher. She's an elementary instructor at Chautauqua. She teaches third grade. And we really want to talk about positives and some of the glitches with this online education. So, Margie, tell me when we had the pandemic get started and after we learned that we weren't going to be going to school and that everybody was going to be online, what did you do immediately after you got off of the floor after you fainted from that word? What were your first thoughts, Margie?
Yeah, so the first thought was just, how are we ever going to pull this off for our kids? Because so much of what happens in school has nothing to do with actually teaching and learning. It has to do with connecting. And it's really hard to connect on the other side of a computer, especially for young children, that we try so hard to keep away from screens.
Yes.
So last spring was pretty rough. We were all across the whole country and across the world without much notice trying to figure things out. And so really last spring, I think most of us focused just on the connection piece and trying to help the kids feel still connected and not feel worried, making sure there's some learning that's going on, but really learning through connecting and enjoying. And so it was a very different kind of plan because we thought it was short term. In fact, I had a folder on my desktop called 6 weeks plan because we were sure it was only for 6 weeks. And
yes,
when it
yes.
became clear it was for the rest of the school year, I kept the name of the folder because I kept hoping we were going to get good news.
It should have been rewritten 6 weeks pain as opposed
yes.
to plan. But yeah, I really understand what you're saying about that connection piece. I just prior to the pandemic, I was at a concert and sitting in front of me was this young couple. I suppose they were 25 or 30. And of course, you know, I was kind of nosy and each one of them had a telephone and they're texting back and forth, you know? And so I had to lean over a little bit to see what the text was, you know, but, one of the texts was, "Want popcorn?" And I'm thinking, whoa, you know, why don't you just turn to her and say, "Would you like some popcorn?" You know? So I think that's kind of the disconnected part of it, but, yeah, I think that that's really important. And don't you also think, and you kind of mentioned this, that kids get nervous about these things. You know, they understand somewhat how it affects them at the same time, kind of from a more global standpoint, it's very difficult to understand when you hear statistics every night, you know, 4,300 people have died in Washington State. I mean, that's got to be pretty disconcerting for third grade students.
Yeah. It's funny. When I went into teaching, I thought it was mostly about how to teach kids, like in elementary school, the skills of reading and math and science. And my very first year of teaching, I guess it's about a week and a half into my first year, was 9/11. And I quickly realized there is a lot more to teaching than just the academics.
Yes.
And
yes.
really helping kids understand the world around them, and especially when things scary are happening and the world around them. One of my heroes is Mr. Rogers, and he always did such a wonderful job of calmly letting kids understand some of the difficulties in their lives. And I think our schools, that's a big role that we play.
Yes, I think that's true. I think Mr. Rogers, would, in that case, would be a much better role model than Wile E. Coyote. Anyhow, but yeah, you must have been in, when 9/11 hit, you must have been in class, weren't you, with students?
Yeah, I was living in Seattle, and I had just biked to work, and we had a place you could go shower, and I got out of the shower and noticed this incredible silence in the office. And I literally thought, like, maybe I popped an eardrum because it was so quiet. And I hadn't even watched the news that morning and hadn't known what was going on. And when I found out, first, you know, just thought about myself in the context of what's going on, and then very quickly switched to, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with these first graders when they show up in 20 minutes? Yeah. How am I going to help them through this?
Yeah. That's interesting, and I think that kids are pretty resilient. I remember I was waiting in the ferry line to go to work on the North End when we first got the news that something. And I know this really dates me, but I also remember that I was in Mr. Olson's biology class in 1963 when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And remember that, and remember kids, you know, just kind of wandering around school, that we had this, you know, this kind of wonderful feeling at that time about John F. Kennedy, and then, boom, everything just kind of fell apart. So so do you deal with those kinds of issues then when you're talking to your kids about the pandemic? What do you say? What do you, what kind of information do you give them?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm a big believer in really thinking about who, what the kids that you're working with and what they're ready for and what they're not ready for. A lot of those decisions happen at home. You know, whether kids are exposed to the media is really a home-based decision.
Sure.
And so I follow their lead mostly and kind of get a sense of what do they know and what don't they know, because some things really are adult issues and aren't appropriate for kids yet.
Right.
And so in this case, it appeared that most of my kids had not been exposed to a lot of the fear-based kind of things that we were all getting as adults, especially on social media. But that doesn't mean they weren't still fearful, because there was this feeling of, what happened to my world? Like, I can't take the bus to school anymore. I don't see my friends. With time, we all started wearing masks. That wasn't happening at the beginning, but so many things change that even if they're not exposed to the media, they knew things did not feel normal and maybe didn't feel comforting. So one of the things we ended up doing in our class last spring is we talked about how it's impacting different people and talked about some of the elders on the island and how they in particular have to feel especially vulnerable right now from a health standpoint, but also from an isolation standpoint. And so we ended up putting together a bunch of programs that the kids created on their own of what could we do to help elders. And so there was some pen pal letters going on, some plans of just connecting with your own elders in your life, whether it be a phone call or a Zoom meeting or sending a picture to an elder in your life. But I think that's the real opportunity, is going from a place of fear into a place of, well, what can I do to make it better?
Yeah, yeah. I know even with, you know, I have a granddaughter who's 7 years old, and she went to kindergarten and then really missed, you know, virtually all of his first grade year. And, you know, we've seen her a little bit on FaceTime. We've seen her, seen pictures that, Dad has sent to us, you know, it's that changed so immediately. And I suppose just even seeing people wear masks has got to be a little different. So when you Do you think that there are some really, you think there are any positives out of this online stuff? Do you think we can learn something from it?
Yeah, I actually think for some kids and some families, it's more positive. For some kids and some families, it's very negative. And that's kind of life, right?
Right.
You can take almost anything, and there isn't a one-size-fits-all for any of us on almost any situation or issue. But yeah, I've got some kids that are thriving. They love all the time at home. They love being around their pets and their family. They have a lot more free time. We're not keeping them online for a whole seven-hour day that they would when they're in person. And so in between classes, they can get outside. There's a different kind of lifestyle to it that some of the kids are really enjoying. Some kids that might have some social anxiety find it much easier being on at home instead of being part of a whole class. Kids that might have some attention issues, ADHD, might find it less distracting not being surrounded by a whole class full of kids.
One of my friends was saying, too, that, that even though we try not to compare kids in a regular class, there still is a certain amount of pressure, peer pressure and everything else. And this friend of mine says his grandson seems to be doing better in a less pressured atmosphere where he can, he doesn't just have 20 minutes to finish up the math problems. He's can kind of work them at his own pace. And, so there probably are some real positives in that respect for students to work at their own pace. So you really think that socialization is probably one of the biggest negatives in this whole process?
Yeah, I'd say, all of us have worked really hard to figure out how to still create socialization, even though we're not in a room together. And so, for example, right before I got on with you, in the afternoons, I do small groups. So I have, instead of having the whole class all at once, I have four or five kids, and it allows the more socialization to happen among the kids than when it's in a whole class. I have a parent who volunteers every Friday and hosts just a fun Friday meetup where anyone who wants to come can show up. And they get on the computer and they play games and they're goofy and have dance parties. And so even though it's not the same, you can create socialization. You just got to work at it.
Yeah, I think that's important. And also to bring in, to get the parents involved, one of the things that I've seen too is parents have a better understanding of exactly what teachers do during a day. You know, it's no longer just send them off to school at 8:30 and pick them up at 3:30, and you don't have to worry about what goes on between those times. How do you see it negatively impacting kids? And are there specific groups of kids that are negatively impacted, talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's two general categories for me that I worry most about, that I'm up late at night worrying about. One is just the mental health piece. There are some kids who are really struggling with anxiety and depression and not having the structure to their day that they're used to, not having the socialization that happens in a classroom setting, has really made that tough for many, many kids of all ages. And this isn't an island-specific thing. We're hearing it all around the world, not just around the country.
Sure.
And so the mental health piece, I think, is, for me, the reason why I can't wait for us to get back in person, because those are the kids that really, it worries me how long this can keep going on for them.
Well, and we do know that as a result of this, that, rates of domestic violence have gone up, drug use, alcohol use, things like that. So there, you know, there are those negatives, and that kind of makes, I'm not trying to justify it, but it certainly makes sense when you've got people that are home in a situation where there may not be, you know, dad or mom may have lost a job. You've got those kinds of issues, and you've got it in a confined space. I have a friend who has they've specifically chosen to, you know, live kind of as minimalists, and they have a 600 square foot home. And, you know, where they say that it normally works pretty fine when you've got kids and mom and dad in 600 square feet, it becomes much more difficult. So you think the structure, I think the structure is really important, and you think that that's important too. How about kids that you work with, like in your class? I'm assuming you probably have a number of kids that are on IEPs.
Yes.
And how does that work, working with the kids that have specific kinds of needs on in the classroom or differentiated instruction? I was going to say differentiated destruction, but that would not be
sometimes it might feel that way.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so hard to compare how we're doing compared to other school districts,
right.
But I've been amazed on our little island how much our special ed department has rallied to figure out, within the confines of what we can and can't do, how can we still meet these students' needs. And so they were the first students to be brought back limitedly, but in person. Not everyone with an IEP, because not everyone with an IEP needs to be in person, but some really do. And so that was the first population to be brought back as soon as we could in small numbers and safely, so that they could have at least some in-person learning. And I think our district's done a wonderful job of balancing the needs with the safety aspect for those particular students, the most vulnerable students. But the other group of vulnerable students I still worry about is the ones that don't have IEPs, but they're struggling terribly. And it may not be a mental health issue. It might be that they just don't have the adult support at home they need to be able to succeed in school from home. And you had made mention this of, you know, living in a small space and the pressures that can happen. Not every child has an adult that can give them the kind of support they need to be able to be successful from home with school. It might be that they have to work outside the home, so they're physically not home. It might be they're simultaneously working. And so the kids just sort of off on their own. And at least I can speak as a third grade teacher. I'd love to say that they're independent by third grade, but they're not. They're still children.
Right.
And so when they're in the classroom, I could see when a student is getting distracted, or I could notice when they're having some anxiety, and I can walk over and help them. And on the other side of the screen, it's really limited what the teacher can do. And so the kids that have an adult nearby are at a huge advantage right now.
You know, that really is, I was just going to say, that really does make sense, because it really strikes a chord, because so many of the people that I've interviewed have said that. It's those little nuances that you see as a third grade teacher. The kid that kind of comes in from recess a little bit late. The kid that looks down when they get to their desk. The kid that doesn't respond when you ask questions in class. You know, those are cues that good teachers, those are triggers that good teachers see that can't be responded to immediately, you know, online as they could in a classroom situation. So what do you see? I'm hoping that, like we said, that, all these students are back next year. But let me just tell you what I think would be a good scenario for next year. listening to a lot of people, and that is that I think that we need to, you know, as my daughter would say, we need to chill out a little bit and not expect kids to come right back up to where they were before. We need to give them some time to kind of mentally get back in with a group, to feel comfortable before we start pushing tons and tons of academics in. Well, how do you feel about that?
Totally, totally agree. You know, as, and I don't know if it's true as kids get older, but certainly elementary years, best practices has really just been a good part of the first month of the school year, building relationships and building a community. And that's when we haven't had a pandemic. That's when the kids just had the summer off and they come back to school. But if you add in the fact of how long it's been since they've been together as in a school setting, I think it will become more important than ever that we really help them rebuild those social skills that are missing and that sense of building a tight community where you know this is a safe place and a place to process what's happened. You know, I try to do that right now when we're remote, and some kids are very open about sharing how things are for them, even when they're on the other side of a computer. But there are some kids that being on a computer is just too awkward to share those kinds of things. And that's going to really have to happen when we're finally back together in person.
Yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense. And I think that, you know, there, you know, as a teacher, we learn so many things that are learned behaviors. And behavior is a learned behavior. I mean, kids are going to have to learn how to get back in that morning program where they're, you know, I'm thinking probably first, second graders or even kindergartners where you go through calendars and you go through the weather and all those kinds of things and how to appropriately raise hands and how to appropriately keep our hands to ourselves. And, you know, those things, I think we can't expect kids to come back and know and remember everything that they knew before. How do you feel as a teacher coming back to that group? I'm assuming that, I mean, I'm hoping, I know that Governor Inslee would like to have, you know, all teachers immediately vaccinated. And is that a concern of yours that you're completely vaccinated by the time that vaccinated and emancipated and whatever other things out there? But how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I can't speak for other teachers, but for myself, I think to ask any workers to be put into a setting with prolonged exposure, unprotected, isn't the right thing to do. It's not the right thing to do for the individual or for our community as a whole. And Inslee actually made a comment about how if we're going to vaccinate our teachers, we should vaccinate grocery workers. Or if we're going to have to ask our grocery workers to come back to work, we should ask our teachers to come back to work.
Yes, yes.
But there's a very big difference. A grocery worker is not in a small space with prolonged exposure over a period of 3 to 6 hours. And so from a teaching standpoint, I think the risk to any educator, and this isn't just a classroom teacher, are higher.
Yes.
And in a grocery store, adults do keep their masks on. These are little kids, and they may struggle with having their mask staying on all day. And so I really strongly believe, especially for our community, to keep us all healthy, that we should have our teachers vaccinated and then come back in person. And I really hope, I know the vaccinations obviously are the shortest. And, you know, I think, I even as a teacher, I think there's some other folks that should be vaccinated before the teachers, personally. You know, I think of certainly the elders in our community are at far greater risk. I think of farm workers that can't work remotely.
Right.
And teachers can work remotely. Is it ideal? No. Lots of this is not ideal. But I would hope that we would prioritize those that can't work remotely and are at high risk first.
Sure.
And I would hope that we would put the health of our educators high enough, but also of the overall community, because there's so much they don't know about the spread of this. We know that kids are lower risk, but they can absolutely be asymptomatic and bring it home and spread it. And, you know, I don't want to hear about one more person on Vashon that ends up getting COVID and getting seriously sick.
Well, you know, I always said, too, you know, if, you know, we see those pictures on the news each night, you know, the COVID virus. And it's, you know, really colorful and, you know, as far as viruses go, kind of a nice-looking virus. But, you know, if it was as big as a tennis ball and looked like that, it'd be a lot easier to avoid. And I think also, when I think of my own time, when I, you know, teaching elementary school and situations, it was not unusual for a kid to come up after recess and kind of, you know, hug my arm and say, you know, Dr. Nurse, I got a, I won at Foursquare, or I, you know, ran faster than somebody else, or it's not unusual to be out on the playground and have a kid fall down and you help a kid get up. And the best teaching really is when you're teaching at eye level, when you know, when teachers are bending over and working with students or sitting down with students at the same level. And so that's why I think it's so important for teachers to be vaccinated. Also, one of the biggest concerns that I have is just I work better when I'm not under a constant level of anxiety. And I think that's the same thing for teachers. You know, I shouldn't have to be anxious going to Thriftway. I shouldn't have to be anxious walking down the street. But I am. And the same thing with teachers. You shouldn't have to be anxious as you walk into the faculty room or when you come into the school, or to think, this kid's nose is running. You know, is that something that I should worry about? And when I supervise student teachers, you know, I used to always tell the new student teachers, just plan on getting sick for about 3 days out of the quarter, because it's going to happen. You know, you're in the largest Petri dish in the world and called a student classroom. And so, yes, so that should... That'll really, really be important for that to happen. And I think it can happen too. I think that we can get that scheduled. Have you had a vaccination yet or anything? Or?
I haven't. I wish, but I haven't. I'm not old enough, and that's pretty much. I either need that or need to have some elders that I'm living with, and I don't have either.
Right. Well, I was real happy to turn 16 and be able to have my driver's license. I was not really that excited to be 70 and then qualify for the vaccine. But I have had my first shot, and I have to say it was easier than any flu shot that I've ever had in any other year. And it'll be nice to see my granddaughter again when that happens. Any final thoughts? Wave your magic wand and tell me what your next year is going to look like.
You know, I'm kind of hoping, and this is not just as a teacher, but as a culture in general, that we all pause enough to take the fabulous things we learned in this not-so-fabulous situation and not lose them. And so I hope as a teacher we do that as well, as a system we do that. You know, maybe on an ongoing basis, we have another kind of school option we put out there for kids that do learn better remotely,
yes,
or do want to spend more time at home, where
yes,
the parents aren't ready to homeschool, because that's a big jump to go to homeschool.
Right.
But maybe we have an alternate kind of schooling system.
Well, I you know, and I think, too, that I used to always ask my graduate students, what's the worst job you've ever had? And they, you know, will tell me all these different horrible, dirty jobs they've had. And my next question is, what did you learn from that bad experience? You know, maybe you learned that, you know, I don't want to work in this place for the rest of my life. So I think that that's what you're saying is really important, that we need to learn from our positives and be resilient from our negatives. And I think with that, we've just about run out of time. But as I told Rick earlier, I am really looking forward to interviewing your daughter next week. That's going to be my favorite of all interviews for this one. So thank you, and thank you, Margie. Take care. Have a great rest of the year. And goodbye, Vashon, and stay safe.